My name is Michael Koop, and I'm the Strategic Prevention Framework Coordinator in New Mexico. I live in Santa Fe. I have a little consulting firm. We do research, planning, and evaluation. And so I'm a contractor with the state operating this or coordinating this effort in our state. Let's see here. Yes. Okay. We received the Strategic Prevention Framework grant. Hey, Roy. In New Mexico as part of the first cohort. We're in our third year now. We're just beginning our fourth year, actually. And part of the first set of tasks for the state was to choose a priority, which then communities would implement around to affect community-level change. So we went through a very extensive process in which we looked at a set of data that was around all of the morbidity and mortality data for the state, around all of the substance abuse-related information that we had. And we had a pretty extensive catalog of information in New Mexico. Once we published that book, which was a product of our EPI work group in New Mexico, we went out to preventionists around the state, community workers around the state, and went through an extensive process of having them look at the data, come to understand the data, and then rank their preferences and their understanding of the data in terms of what they believe should therefore be the priority in our state for the grant. And we ended up selecting motor vehicle-related fatalities, alcohol-related motor vehicle fatalities. So once the state priority was determined, we awarded funds to 13 communities, which then assessed the impact of the factors that we're going to talk about in a moment across their communities. And ultimately, their goal or their charge is to match strategies to the key causal factors or intervening variables that contribute to drinking and driving and binge drinking. Here is the logic model that we developed. Our priority age group based on the data is 15 to 24-year-olds, and within that, primarily Hispanic and Native American males. So this was our priority that was selected in our state as a result of our process. The research literature that we looked at really suggested that four key variables were in effect that led to that. Binge drinking for underage youth, drinking and driving by underage youth, young adult binge drinking, and drinking and driving by young adults. So those are the four behaviors we're trying to change and measure separately. The four causal factors that we selected are from this list of seven, and I'll talk to you in a moment about how we prioritize this, but easy retail access, low enforcement, social access to alcohol, a low perception of the risk of use, and in this case we are interpreting this as a low perception of the risk of detection or arrest, specifically around DUI, norms that encourage drinking and driving, promotion, and pricing. So this is our way of talking about the logic model. Now we found a better way to do this that is much more community friendly because they don't understand things in quite such a linear way. And so we developed this way, this picture of talking about the logic model. And also this shows too that there are things, if you look at social norms, for example, in the middle there, the light purple one, social norms is not a thing you can point to and count or measure in your community. It's made up of a whole lot of little factors that people agree that we call social norms, as is the case with all these others, low enforcement, low perception of risk, etc. So these little boxes hanging off of the larger boxes are what we came to call contributing factors to the intervening variables or causal factors in our state. And what this allowed is a way for communities then to start categorizing all of the things that they collected through their assessment process. So the state rolled out this assessment process with an extensive set of instruments across the seven intervening variables, and they collected data through surveys, interviews, focus groups, direct observations, and specifically things like going into bars to see if they observed sales to intoxicated adults. So those are the kinds of very hands-on community-level assessment that we designed into this process. And in addition, they collected local archival data and put that into the mix. This is an example of the kinds of things they found. This is what actually was found in one community in New Mexico. They did find that there was a low level of enforcement, and part of that is that there was a lack of sobriety checkpoints. Youth were able, are able to purchase alcohol at stores in a community. The problem, though, is that even there, you don't have enough information to then plan ultimately a strategy. And so you have to go past the actual sort of observational information to find out what specifically causes a lack of sobriety checkpoints. And so there are then these other ways that we work with communities to help them figure out and teach them to go in and interview community stakeholders, and in that case the police chief or the sheriff or the state police, to find out why there is a lack of checkpoints in a certain part of the state. So there are these different levels of this assessment process that communities ultimately need to actually create a plan that will make a difference, because it's very easy to focus on the wrong thing. You can have a lack of sobriety checkpoints for dozens of different reasons. And so this is a process that we develop to help communities think about which pieces are really driving the fact that there's low enforcement, and therefore which things they might be able to impact or at least prioritize over time. The assessment helped communities in a lot of ways, since we designed the set of instruments comprehensively to collect the data, to figure out which of those factors were crucial in their community, and figure out a way to prioritize them, and then ultimately to select strategies that focused on those. There are a lot of challenges to a state system to have this kind of hands-on process. It's been quite a lengthy and complicated process to work with communities to do this level of assessment to result in really impactful plans. The whole process required a lot of new skills at both the state level to help the state system work with communities better, and at the community level to start working in different ways. In our state, we've historically focused on direct service kinds of programs and youth development programs, focused on individuals in classroom settings and community settings. We've not had a lot of emphasis in our prevention field in New Mexico on policy level and system level and environmental level changes. So this was a shift in our state. We needed a huge, huge infusion of resources into our training and technical assistance systems to help this work. And so that was a big challenge in our state that we're still addressing, still trying to figure out how to provide enough. There are a lot of biases about why people drink and where you have to focus the effort to change drinking and driving. And so part of the challenge is to shift communities and think about that better or more accurately, in fact. And then the partnerships between what our research community knows and can share with us and develop into things that we can use at the community level is a challenge as well. And so the fact that you have to maintain really strong partnerships is critical. From a state perspective, logic models provide a big framework for understanding why all of these programs function in the way they do, what the changes are needed, or what changes are needed to actually change the driving contributors or the causal factors in a community. The logic models do allow for consistency and a comprehensive approach. We know what we have to train around. We know what we have to do technical assistance around. We didn't know how much we were going to have to do, but the logic model at least gives us a framework to move towards, so we always know where we are headed. The logic model helps communities stay focused. It's very easy in communities to choose a favorite program or a favorite strategy, and having a logic model that we can always point to and say, what do your data tell you about what are most important, helps us keep communities focused on the real work in their community and not their favorite program that they found out about at a recent conference. That's a pretty common thing across a lot of states, I've found. The logic model helps in prioritizing, because there are way too many things to focus on. And so the resources that are limited in every community grant, but especially in the SPIFSIG, in our state, the grants were about $150,000 to each community. And so it was impossible to focus across all seven of those intervening variables. And so the logic model allowed communities to really weigh the impact of those based on the research, again, that we developed or that we disseminated to communities and talked about through our partnership with PIRE. But really understanding how these things impact the problem behaviors made a huge difference. And so that partnership with PIRE was incredibly important for us. And the other piece that has really grown out of this is that the capacity to do this kind of work and to think in this way and to really always focus back on what your data tell you at the community grows over time. And it also makes our state system a lot smarter as we begin to figure out comprehensive, more effective, long-term ways to support communities through training and technical assistance efforts.